as we said during our last meeting, that before considering the agenda item for the day, we had to clear one issue that was still outstanding. Let me just start from just here and go this way.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Siyabonga Mahlangu from Edward Nathan Sonnenberg Fraternities. I'm here with my colleague, Kamansa Pillay, and we are with our clients from the scrap metal business, and they will introduce themselves as you go that way.
Can we hear your voice, madam?
Hi, I'm Kamansa Pillay. I'm with Siyabonga Mahlangu from Edward Nathan Sonnenberg.
We need this soprano alto in this community. Yes, I can.
Hi, I'm Atul. I'm from scrap metal industry, along with Kamansa Pillay.
Good morning, Honorable Chairman and respected dignitaries. I am from scrap metal business and from Madras Metals, along with Mr. Siyabonga. Thank you.
You're on the Biscotti Department of Justice.
Thank you. Good morning, Jody Ann Lekirk with the Procedural Services Office, NCOP.
Zanele Mene with Committee Success.
Jeff Klaas, Southern African Book Dealers Association.
Ian Balkin, Southern African Book Dealers Association.
Henrietta Dax, Southern African Dealers, Book Dealers Association.
Morning, Khoshi Berg van der Walt, South African Police Services, Legal Services.
Mr. Herman Smuts from the Office of Chief State Law Advisor.
Yeah, I'd have to put it back there. If you could just go closer to the mic.
Paul Mills, South African Book Dealers Association.
Meredith Campthorne, Southern African Book Dealers Association.
Good morning, I'm Patricia Whittle from the Research Section. Thank you.
Ndombi Mikiso, State Law Advisor.
Who are we leaving out? Grace, it's my committee secretary.
Good morning to all. Vivek, scrap metal.
Right. Can I, without any waste of time, the request that to be given the outcome of the discussions between the department, the table staff, state law advisor offices, parliamentary legal advice, top management, in the name of Zanele and everybody. Hey, Zanele. Yeah. It's in connection with the mandating bill, colleagues. You remember that there is a clause that was inserted by the Portfolio Committee. And unfortunately, as this House, we're not comfortable with that clause that was inserted by the Portfolio Committee. Now, because as a committee, we adopted that report with that particular insertion that we're not comfortable with. We want a way out of it because, as you're aware, it's Section 70. Johan, Judy, Zanele, and everybody, and Mayor Smith, and everybody, please talk to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will say we are going to speak on procedure in terms of getting out of that without going into details because I believe the committee is fully aware in terms of the background of the bill. what happened is that because the committee has adopted that report, the report should go to the house, that should go to the house of the NSOP. The report now is with the NA. Once the NA has adopted that, it's going to be referred to the NSOP. And once it's in with the NSOP, if the NSOP doesn't want to adopt those amendments, in terms of the constitution and in terms of the rules of parliament, the committee, there's nothing else it can do in that particular bill. It has two options, it's either to accept or to reject those proposed amendments. And now what we're saying, if the committee wants to reject those amendments, it must get the mandates from the provinces saying that we are rejecting this bill. And once the proposed amendment has been rejected, automatically Parliament is going to establish a mediation committee. And once that committee is established, the NSOP will have an opportunity to engage with the National Assembly and then convince the National Assembly that they don't want those amendments. So once that has happened, then a report will be tabled in both houses, and then the bill will be passed and go to the President for signature. So what we need to do now, the way forward, is that we inform the provinces to reject the proposed amendments, to send rejecting amendments, I mean mandates, rejecting the proposals. Then once that has happened, it goes to the NSOP, the NSOP endorsed that, and then a mediation committee will be established.
Thank you, Zanelle. Julie?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just for record, if I could just put in the apology from Advocate Nonyane, he wasn't able to be here today. And just to supplement what Zanelle has said, Advocate Nonyane met with Advocate Labuschagne and myself yesterday, looked again at those definitions that were inserted by the Portfolio Committee. And there was an understanding that there is merit to some of the concerns which the Portfolio Committee had, and what they thought they were addressing by including the definition of question and so on. But I think, as Advocate Labuschagne acknowledged, it was done without the benefit of knowing the actual procedures and the way the NCOP operates. And indeed, those amendments have the effect of widening the ambit for which mandates would be required, which would have an effect that mandates would be needed for motions, for internal processes, for draft resolutions, international agreements, a host of matters which would not be the intention for which mandates would be required. However, having said that, in agreement with Sanele, the Constitution, Section 76(2)(d), only gives the NCOP the two options. They either adopt the amended bill from the NA or reject it. And as Daniel has indicated, our strong recommendation would be that the bill be, as amended, be rejected, and that would then put in process the mediation committee. At the moment, Honourable Chairperson, your committee, as I understand, has completed its deliberations on this mandating procedures bill, and there is a report. So that report would need to be programmed, as Anele said, to come above the line for the NCOP plenary. And I think members in the last few days have had an experience where a committee report or a bill was then referred back to a committee. That is exactly the process that will get followed again, and that will then allow your committee, Honourable Chair, to reconsider and to receive those mandates which say reject the bill, and that will then put that process in place. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Jodie. Lapis?
Chair, I can't express any views on the process or procedures to be followed, but we did meet yesterday, and it's clear to me that the way that the bill has been formulated now will definitely create an additional burden on the NCOP in order to obtain mandates for issues that is not really necessary. So I do agree with the view that this committee, should the committee decide not to accept the amendments proposed by the Portfolio Committee and the NA, then the committee must ask to follow the process set out in the Constitution, and that is the rejectable. Thank you, Chairman.
Zanel.
Thank you, Chairperson. The way forward, we'll try to speak with the office of the NSOP Chairperson just to inform the speaker so that provinces don't get confused in terms of the process, so that they are fully aware what mandates they need to bring on this particular bill.
Office of the State Law Advisor, any comment for myself, Honourable Mr. Smith?
Chairperson, no, I can't comment on it. I wasn't aware of this problem. What I've heard from the process side, I agree with what was stated by my colleagues.
That puts the matter to rest for now, unless if colleagues want to comment on it, but I think we got the gist of how we should go out of this. Let me call the mess for now. Yeah, on that note, you are duly mandated to, or before I summarize it, Honorable Moseki.
The point that you are just about to make, Chairperson, that's why I was coming, just to check, because now we've got a legal opinion. Shouldn't we be having a committee resolution that actually authorizes to take the route that they are taking? Shouldn't that be the views of the committee rather than just a legal opinion? And that's my view, that's how it should happen, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Great mind, Ramesh. Yeah, and then the NSR office led by the office, the table staff, committee section Zanele, and you are duly mandated to make sure that this process unfolds until to the point where the matter comes back to the committee. I think it's clear. It's over. I find yeah, no, I was just saying everything is clear, bottom line. Yeah, anything other than what we just said now? Are we done? That takes care of this particular item. Thanks very much for the advice, as always. Lapis office and committee section and the table staff, and also the state law advisor. Thank you very much. If you want to stay, you can stay and enjoy the proceedings here and watch yours truly when conducting his business. But if you feel like you want to attend some other businesses, then it's fine. Good. Lapis, are those bills now formally referred to us or only next week, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Chairperson, all the bills were approved by the NA on Wednesday, the 20th. When I looked at the minutes of the proceedings, when I looked at the ATC, I saw that the Constitution 15th Amendment Bill has also been referred to the NCOP, which in my view is a mistake. So I went to the table this morning and I spoke to an official at the table of the NA. I pointed out this matter to him and he said that he will look into it and that he will come back to me with an answer why that has happened, whether it's a mistake on their side or whether it was deliberately done that way. So unfortunately at the moment I don't think this committee should proceed, because the answer that he, or the solution that he comes up with, could affect the manner in which this committee has to deal with the Constitution 15th. So I see that the committee has a meeting scheduled for next week, Tuesday, I think. So I would like to suggest to the committee that the whole issue of all the three bills stand over till next week, so to give us sufficient time to address or to find out exactly what happened. Thank you, Chairperson.
Friend check with Julian Zanelli, Constitution 15 Amendment Bill is not supposed to be referred to the NCOP. It's only the NA baby, because usually we're dealing with all those things. But I take your advice. I think it takes us somewhere. But can I hear your comment about the process that this is just talked to us to?
Thank you.
It's about floor crossing bills, the three bills.
Chair, we had a brief discussion, again, as part of the discussion yesterday, and indeed, I think just to be on the safe side around what the actual tagging was, we looked at, it just said Section 74, but did not indicate, because the Constitution, as you know, 74 has within itself different classifications around whether the NCOP does more than just have a public debate. Certainly on all the constitutional amendment bills, the NCOP does at least debate, but the question is, does it have to take an actual decision? And I think it would be in the interest of making sure that we've got the correct process before we proceed further. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jody. Susanna?
Chair, I concur with Jody, and we need to double-check the tagging, because I think the confusion is at the tagging, when the bill was tagged, because initially it says Section 74. So if it's not specific, we need to check exactly what is that before the committee can continue. We will do that, I'm sure, by the end of business today. We'll have an answer to you.
Thanks very much. I think we accept the advice from the expert that let's defer debate or entertaining the three bills today until next week, because I think the whole of next week is a committee week. We'll be able to look into the dots and cross the T's and commas and whatever. Yeah, thanks very much. Therefore, you are excused if you want to, but I would have loved to see you staying here until whenever. But you're excused. Thanks very much. Yeah, I want those who are going to make presentation to start being ready, because we're going to call you one by one, uninterrupted. Immediately after, then we'll ask questions. Now we'll be dealing with the second-hand goods bill. Just get ready, because we'll be starting in a minute from now. Those who are going to make presentations might just be ready.
Excuse me, Honourable Chairman. I see that the scrap metal people are already ready with a presentation. We also have a presentation which we would want to make, so we would defer to them if there is something they want to do and go second.
Yeah, in terms of the list before me, advised by my office, you'll all be given a chance to address the committee. Colleagues, we received a request from these people to address us on the second-hand goods bill. We're going to give a chance without any waste of time to the Nathan Sonnenberg. Edward Nathan Sonnenberg. I can see they are ready, they are itching, they can't wait to address us. Then from then I'll take this order. Then, Chief, let me check how long do you want to address us, because you must give us enough time to ask you questions. How much time do you need to address us?
Chair, our presentation only centers around two sections of the bill. So I think we'll try and be as brief as possible. I'm just not sure how long that is, but it's brief enough.
Yeah, the brief, you know. When you're talking to lawyers, must be careful, lawyers, you know, you must be careful. Let me pin him down. How brief, Chief? More or less.
I think 15, 20 minutes.
Not brief, Chief. Bear in mind that there are still about, two groups to address us again. Two or three. Try to squeeze it. Just close your documents.
I'll squeeze it.
Try, Chief.
Yes.
I know it's unfair to you, but in the best interest of all of them, I think want to hear them as well.
We'll squeeze it.
Okay. Quick one. Shoot Chief from the hip. We're all ears now.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues in the industry. We act for a group of companies that comprise of Midas Metal, Inox Metal, Casper Logistics, and Simran Investrade. Our primary concern relates to two sections, Chair. But maybe just as a precursor, before I get to those two sections, is to indicate, Chairperson, that the companies that we're talking about invest significantly in the country and are foreign-owned or controlled. You will note that one of the companies has approximately a turnover of 155 million rand a year, which is Midas.
Chairperson, there are so many presentations, I think, from the scrap metal. There are about two or three. Which document are we talking? Two. Number three.
For the summarized version, but they're talking to number three.
Okay. Just for, yeah.
Chair, I just beg leave to end that so that you can follow me, because the presentation is behind your back. But I'm just saying that the PowerPoint slides are... Yeah. It's the same, it's just a condensed version. Yes, Chair, as I say, that you will note that our clients invest significantly in the country with a turnover of about 155 million from Midas Metal. And you also have Inox Metal, which is a sister company, which also invests very significantly in the order of the hundreds of millions. So, Chair, our key concern, perhaps one should just go straight to it, is that every legislation in the country must at least defer to the Constitution at the point of almost a holy benediction writ. Why am I saying that? Is that let's be guided by Section 9 of the Constitution, which requires us not to unfairly discriminate against others. Now, if we are looking at that Section 9 and we read Section 2, in particular Section 2.1 of the bill, you will note that it talks about qualifications for registration. And in that qualification, it says a person other than a natural person may only be registered if that person is run, owned, managed, or controlled by a person who's not disqualified. Now, if you go to Section 14, which then deals with your disqualification, 14.1 says, a person is disqualified from being registered as a dealer if, among others, such person does not permanently reside in the Republic. Now, that residence is not defined, and you will see in our written submission we assumed but did not conclude. We assumed, Chair, but did not conclude that that permanent residence, as referred to in Section 14, should be read in the same way as it's dealt with in our immigration legislation. In such case, to us, it results in certain anomalies. The first anomaly is, for most other industries, the companies can be owned, controlled, and managed by foreigners. You have, for instance, MTN, which is currently led by a non-resident who is here on a valid work permit. Why can't that situation also pertain to the scrap metal industry? And if indeed there is some form of differentiation, we are asked by Section 36 of the Constitution to try and see if this legislation has some rational connection to a legitimate government cell purpose. And in this regard, we are at pains to find a legitimate governmental purpose served by the differentiation. First, there is a differentiation between foreigners that own, foreigners that control, and foreigners that manage the organization. And secondly, you have to look at that category of people versus the locals, and also versus the other foreign people who are participating in different industries. And we are saying to you, Chair, that there doesn't seem to be a connection between a rational governmental objective and this differentiation. And therefore, we understand that there's probably something that we are not privy to. But we are saying to you, Chair, that it also has other unintended consequences, which are, it's against government policy on attracting foreign direct investment in the country, which has been espoused in the ASCISA and TIPSA. And we are saying, Chair, maybe there is a need to align this issue. Because our clients, in their business, they contribute to our tax. Our clients also, in export revenue, in the past financial year, have brought into the country in excess of 540 million rand. Further, that in international best practice, our clients operate in over 30 countries globally, in the Middle East, in the UK, in the Far East, and as well as in Africa. And in all of that, we have not found any prohibition of the kind we are dealing with here. So, Chair, just to conclude, our clients fully support what the bill seeks to achieve, which is to curtail and deal with criminal activity, which is endemic in the scrap metal industry. So we suggest, Chair, that perhaps the bill should not be approved in its current formulation. Maybe the bill should also consider having certain audits, probity audits. You would have probably, because there is a value chain in the scrap metal industry. You have a person who has a piece of copper wire or whatever it is, who will then go into a bucket seller, who then takes that and sell it to the bigger dealers. And those bigger dealers get to the tap of my client and sell that in container type volumes. And my client would not be in a position to know where the criminal activity happened in that value chain. But my client will be prohibited to be registered. And those other people in the smaller bucket seller, because he's not exporting anything, he can commit criminal activity, but he can still remain as a registered scrap metal vendor. So, Chair, we think that perhaps there also needs to be some form of qualification at that level where there is an interface between the supplier of a piece of metal and the entry point into the value chain. And also, Chair, we believe that we should also at least marry what we're trying to do with existing legislation that deals with exports. Further, Chair, in order to deal with this concern that we have of Section 2, read with Section 14, we are suggesting that the committee should perhaps look at some form of a rewording of Section 14. This rewording, Chair, I will quickly shoot to it, which is in the end, and I'm sure, Chair, that this should be able to assist us in some point. We are saying, Chair, perhaps we must say in 14.1, we amend E of 14.1 to say that if it does not permanently reside in the Republic, perhaps also insert a definition of permanent residence, whether it's per the Immigration Act or it's got a more narrow interpretation or effect. And once we've dealt with a permanent resident, we're also saying insert in E what we have underlined there, that or is not a holder of a valid work permit if the person who's managing. And I think we also need to deal with a distinction between ownership and management, shareholding and management, or directorship and management. I think that distinction needs to be echoed in the bill. Because as it is right now, it's far-reaching. For instance, a scrap metal dealer, even if it's controlled by locals or managed by locals, if it's owned, because this interest that we're talking about, or partnership, if it's owned by a foreign company or foreign nationals, then it cannot get the required registration if we read these as it is. So we think that some form of attraction of foreign direct investment should be encouraged in Section 14. Chair, I do not want to detain you longer than that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Mapo Mashang. Yeah, any addition from whoever? I know you have been on behalf of the clients. Do you want to say anything? Okay. Colleagues, please, I realize you have been noting while you were addressing us. I will allow questions immediately after everybody has addressed us. Even the Office of the State Law Advisor, and I will allow them to address us on the proposal made by Edward Nathan Sunday. Do you have a formal reformulated clauses as proposed that you can circulate to the committee?
Chair, it is contained in our main submission, but also in the PowerPoint that I have applied to the committee now.
Next will be the South African Books Book Dealer Association. Shoot from the hip.
You want to go first? Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. I would just like to make a very quick introduction of some of the people that we've got here. My name is Ian Balkin. I run a bookshop in Grahamstown called Fables Bookshop. We have here on my left Henrietta Dax, who is the proprietor of Clark's Africana, Clark's Bookshop in Cape Town. Clark's Bookshop is an iconic shop in Cape Town. It's been there, I believe, since 1958, and Henrietta Dax has been in charge as owner since 1980. Next to me on my other side, I have Jeffrey Klaas, proprietor of Collector's Treasury in Johannesburg, also an iconic shop, and they have been operating since 1974. On the other side of Jeffrey here, we have Paul Mills. He is Clark's Africana in Rare Books, and that's been operating since 1998. And the last member of our team there is Meredith Kempthorne. She's been in the trade since 1998 and is currently proprietor of Tall Stories Books in Irene, just outside of Pretoria. We're here today just to brief you on our concerns with a second-hand goods bill. And actually, with that comment, I'm going to hand over to Jeffrey Klaas, who will make our presentation for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chairman, members of the committee, we are here primarily to represent the interests of the Southern African Book Dealers Association, but in so doing, we would like to represent a broader interest of non-members of the association who deal in the same categories of goods that we deal in, because the problems that will arise from those which will impinge on our membership are also the problems which will arise in the broader context of the trade as such. And so I would like whatever we say to be extended not only to apply to members of our association, which is our primary intent, but also to extend to the category of goods as such, whether people who deal in it are members or not members of the association. I'd also like to preface by saying that we are in full agreement with the principles that underlie this Secondhand Goods Act, that there is criminality, that there is a vast need to tighten up on certain aspects of trade in secondhand goods, and that there have been, that the old Act, being more than 50 years old, is out of date both in terms of its content and in terms of the fact that it does not address the electronic issues that have arisen in trading over the, in the intervening period. And so, yes, we see the need for the Act. We see that it applies to categories which were previously not well regulated and that likewise involve large amounts of turnover, high volume and big money, as opposed to the type of turnover that is experienced within our own trade. So we're not in dispute as that. We are here primarily to try and assure you that books do not fall into the ambit of this Act, to try and ask you to either, if the committee has the jurisdiction, to remove books from the categories of goods included in the Act, to so do, or otherwise under Section 43E of the bill, to request the minister to use his prerogative to remove any items or to exempt items or to change the conditions under which those items are listed, sold or dealt in. That being my introduction, we have submitted a lengthy submission to this committee already, outlining all our concerns. We have also produced for today, should the committee want it, and I'm going to give perhaps the opportunity and ask you whether you do in fact want an audiovisual presentation which represents and amplifies some of the aspects of our original submission. Now, I'm aware that the committee's time is valuable and we don't want to really go over ground that has already been trodden unless absolutely necessary or something which will in fact give greater clarity to what has already been said. We also have that audiovisual presentation in hard copy, which we will give you so that they've printed enough copies to distribute to the entire committee. So that can, and I don't know if you want that, plus we have a short summary of the content of the presentation, which we will also give to you. And again, that may clarify things. Mr. Chair, would you like to indicate whether you want to go on that route or whether you want us to talk in general terms as to how we see the books not falling in?
I would rely on you which one you want to shoot from, because I would rather that you concentrate on the issues that they want us to address rather than going all over the board. But I'm not going to restrict you, but please convince us and just direct us to the exact clause where you think we need to address it as this committee.
In that case, I think then I will just address the matters rather than taking you through the presentation, which will in any case be in your hands in hard copy form so that you can study it and see it. It is very clear and self-explanatory in any case and highlights the main issues. So I would rather then just talk to those issues and we'll go from there. I have to also say that part of our concerns were based on the PDF version of the bill, which was online, and that we were not in possession of the B version of this bill, which now exempts certain categories of goods under 100 rand. So that does address some of the issues, but not the principles that underlie the issues. So that, yes. Plus the fact that valuables have now been defined, whereas they were not previously defined in the Act, and that also, in some cases, may mean that a book is a valuable and vice versa in terms of the definitions of the Act. And so I'm pleased to see that there is a definition, although, again, the definition is sufficiently vague to state that valuables are goods which have a significant monetary value, but does not indicate what constitutes a significant monetary value, and as such then is open to some kind of subjective interpretation, which is perhaps a bit too loose for people who trade in valuables in general, and certainly I would find it loose in terms of my own trade. As a background, the association represents what we would like to think is the more organized section of the trade, insofar as these are people who have a fixed presence in the marketplace. We have been established since 2002 as an association. We have 30 paid-up members. We have a full constitution which has been published, is appended to our submission, and is in any case online, should anyone want to see it, at our website. Most of our traders have been in trade for a lengthy period of time, some of them up to 50 years and more, and our aim was to represent the top end of the trade who could in fact subscribe to the principles of our constitution without any problems and without needing to be policed by us. We trade in a wide range of books and associated material, so we're not sure. I presume that would then fall under valuables. So I want to. That is why I'm looking at valuables, because we deal. A book is an object, but book dealing implies trade in paper collectibles of all sorts. So maps, prints, postcards, autograph letters, manuscripts, and various other categories all fall under that ambit and need to be addressed within the context of our trading. 99% of what the trade in general deals in, even our membership, are items that are under 100 rand. And so, in terms of the Act, a lot of the sting now has been taken out of the issue involved in recording every single detail, not only of the supplier of the goods, of the time when, and the final purchase and the final sale purchase details, but also the identifying features of each of those books, because in general, books don't have identifying features. And so we are faced with a problem of trying to tag each item in such a way that it is indisputable that that particular copy out of an edition of 40 million identical copies is the copy that constitutes the proceeds of crime. There is just no way of satisfying that requirement of the Act. I'd like to also point out that in contradiction to the certain other major categories, scrap metal being perhaps one of the most obvious in essence, is that books and associated materials are sold in exactly the same form all the time in which they were originally made, and not in any kind of transmuted form. So it's not as though we have to keep track of cable theft, just for argument's sake, so that there's an ongoing passing on of the metal, of the material, in a form other than that in which it was originally stolen. A book is a book, and the moment it is not a book, it also has no cash value at all, other than scrap as pulp. So I think we need to point that out, that the concerns which are major concerns in other sections of the Act are not concerns within our trade at all. There are a fair number of people engaged in the trade right across, but again, it is in itself a very small trade compared with the numbers of players within other trades, and also compared with the size, both in terms of volume and in terms of gross turnover. You know, when I see a figure of 155 million rand up there, that is probably three times the value of the total second-hand book trade within this country as a whole. And therefore, you know, we are a small industry, and because we're a small industry, we're also a fairly closely knit industry, and we communicate well at our own level. We're capable, probably, of self-regulation, certainly at a South African Book Dealers Association end, we are capable of self-regulation. We'll come to that a little later. We also have other problems in that our stock is not acquired from people from whom we can obtain identity very easily all the time. Yes, if we buy from a person, we buy from another dealer, we buy from an auction house, we have fixed ports of call where we can refer back to the identity of the supplier. But, and the big but, is that we also buy large quantities of books from charities, from school fetes, from street sales, and from other less or totally informal sources of supply. And so getting the necessary documentation to put into a police register is impossible. To turn up at a church fete and say to the seller, I'm sorry, we have to have a copy of your ID because we just spent a certain amount of money at your store, that's just not going to work and it's not going to happen. So what I'm in fact saying is that the burden of record that this Act will place on our industry is such that the logistical requirements just cannot be satisfied at either a practical level, forget about the numbers and so on, although the 100 grand limit does take away a lot of that. But even so, there are charities and there are organizations that are given nice donations of things, and we may well spend occasionally, but not often.
The typical second-hand trading unit is a small business. It's normally a sole trader with one or two assistants. The requirement that the Act places on the owner of such a business to have to give a short period of time, 3 months, to get back stock online and into register form is impractical. I have a back stock of 1 million books plus. To ask me to do that, to now go back and establish where and where every single copy came from is impossible. We buy things in large quantities and don't process necessarily immediately because we are often forced to buy 500 items to get 20 items that are immediately saleable. The other 480 may not be immediately saleable, but we feel that in the long term they may be saleable, and we take them into stock and process them at the time that we take them into stock and not the time at which we purchase them. So that it is a slow and gradual process and not an immediate one. And we, again, it would strain the logistics and the resources of any small operation to keep up with that kind of volume that passes through the hands. The more expensive items that we sell are much more easily defined, and I suppose to some extent we would be it would be easier to keep track of them if we raised the level above 100 rand. 100 rand is still, in terms of today's market, a too low a threshold for keeping track of stock, bearing in mind that an average new book costs three times that. It becomes there is a borderline which makes 100 rand too low for as a threshold, and I'd like to see that raised if possible for the purposes of recording stock, but that is obviously up to the committee to decide. Our objection is primarily based on the fact that similar legislation has twice been attempted to be introduced elsewhere in the world, in Scotland and in Los Angeles local. In both cases, it has proved to be totally unworkable in relation to books, and while it remains on the statute books, is totally unobserved on either side, either by the participants in the trade or by the police, who feel that it is a total waste of their time and effort to go and police something where there is so little criminal activity. I think it's fairly obvious that when somebody breaks into a house, no one ever reports that books have been stolen. Yes, your hi-fi, yes, your car is taken, your clothes, furniture under some circumstances. But I've given a wonderful instance where, in fact, a flat that was standing empty, closed up for 3 months in the deceased estate, was broken into, and everything cleaned out. And all that was left was the books that were in the bookcase that had been emptied out of the bookcases so that they could steal the furniture. But the books were lying heaped in the carpet in this empty flat. And so this, I think, is an example which tells you how low down in the criminal priority books are. It's also, as I say, obvious that books are not attractive to organized crime, and that most petty theft of books is for personal purposes only and not for the purposes of economic gain on the part of the
of the thief. In other words, they'll steal a book because they want it for themselves. So it's never going to pass into the market, and the Act therefore does not apply to that. We have our own system of policing theft within the association, whereby we run a bulletin on the internet for stolen valuable items. And we found that fairly successful in recovering that. It's like a bush telegraph. It goes through the trade. No one will buy it. And it therefore becomes very speedily unsaleable, sometimes within hours. So I don't think that's it. In terms of the effects of the Act, the effects of insisting on all the procedures will force the trade in many cases just to close and not operate because it is no longer economically viable so to do. With the result that staff will be retrenched, the revenue to the state will be reduced, obviously, and most importantly, and the source of knowledge and culture that the trade provides to the community as large. We are a community service, even though we're an industry and we make money out of it. But we keep the cultural values alive by presenting material which is otherwise not available in the marketplace. Not every book ever published is in print. And we supply research material and recreational material and sources of knowledge to the community at large. We also provide a valuable service in providing cheaper sources of knowledge to disadvantaged people who cannot afford to otherwise buy. We provide sources of material otherwise not obtainable. And so I think I've stretched on the major points. I would like you either, as I say, to remove books as a category altogether. That is our preferred state because they really don't apply to the same criteria as the rest of the, as many of the others. But failing which, we would like the restrictions relaxed to such an extent that we are able to practice our trade without feeling that we are being completely swamped by the bureaucratic structure. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's cut out clear. Any addition from your colleagues? Any addition? It's clear.
We will just hand out the hard copy material to whomever.
We'll appreciate it.
Do we want that now, or do we just leave it with you to hand out?
If it's available,
it's available now.
Oh, let's have it.
So let's do that.
Yeah, honourable members, we listened to the two presentations with clear proposals to the committee. It's up to us now to ask questions for clarity or whatever question you want to pose. I won't restrict members to direct your questions to which group, but you just ask any question to whoever. I think they are ready and itching to respond to our questions. And they can't wait for it. In fact, I'm delaying them. I have noticed Honorable Leroux, Honorable Mzizi, Honorable Mac, Honorable Museki in that order. The department is here. I will request you to come after that and then to respond to what they are saying. Thank you very much. Dakhbare Leroux.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and I would like to congratulate both the parties that made presentations to us this morning. It was very well done and very interesting to listen to. I personally am a lover of books, and I think books are probably one of the most important assets that any country can have. I can, for the love of me, not see why books were included in this bill. I'd like to hear the police services on this and our legal people on this. But honestly, Chairman, as far as I'm concerned, books should be taken out. It's an unnecessary burden. We're over-regulating. We're burdening people that actually serve the country in giving our people a chance to read. So I would honestly plead for us to remove this from the bill. About the metals, I leave it to my colleagues. They know more about scrap than I do.
What are you playing, Evelyn? No, thanks very much. I think the department will respond to your question, Honorable Leru, as to why did they include books. And the Office of the State Law Advisor are here as well. They will assist us in responding to that. That's why, what is your opinion on that one? Honorable Mzizi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I need to be very fair to Mr. Mahlangu Mabhoko. He has been very brief. And I'll ask only one question. Chairperson, I have listened to Mabhoko and I noted the concern he had about the foreign trade. But now, if Mabhoko can respond to me on the bill itself, on Section 4, Sub 2, you know, after E. It says the Commission may require the applicant to furnish additional information or particulars and may require that the applicant's fingerprints be taken. Will a foreigner be submissive to that, to be taken fingerprints, knowing probably that where he comes from the country from which he comes from, there are previous conviction entailed in his what's name in his particulars? Or even if we know about that, what are we going to do with it if that person has actually entered into our country and has that, or he refuses towards him to be taken fingerprints? That is the concern I have in the foreign trade. To Mapo. Coming to the book association, publication association. Chairperson, when I briefed the province, in fact in the public hearing, you would recall, sir, that you did request the department to give you a clause by clause notes on a second hand bill, so as to be explicit what is it entails, so that when we deal with it we know. And I would also quote, among other things that the department has furnished us. It says, dealers must keep goods that they buy for a period of 7 days. During this time, the appearance of the goods may not be tampered with. This prevents dealers from respraying a vehicle or melting a copper wire, and it says the contravention. Now, a book. What do we do with a book? Can you keep that for 7 days? Can you keep it for how long? And are you going to respray it or probably cover it? The problem and the dilemma I have, sir, as I said, I don't even know whether should I ask them questions. The problem I have, which I, if it does actually go through, then I would also accept that I misdirected the province in the public hearings, because the bill, it actually spells the three categories. It was a scrapyard, a pawnbroker, and the other one, the recycling. It dealt with that. I did not touch anything about books. Till such a time I was echoed that look at the schedule of goods. Now I find that they talk of sporting equipment, clothing, valuables, I don't know what the valuables could be, books, and shop fitting equipment. So all those things I don't see any relevancy in us actually dealing with. I would like to have that if we talk about that, those who steal my golf clubs, if I can catch them, but I won't know what is the value of it. I won't even know the description of the golf club. There are pilfering everywhere, but we talk of things that have a value more than 100 rand and probably a half core metal that probably one could have a serial number of some kind. And therefore, sir, I'm also of the same opinion that I don't even see under which category they fall in, these what's named, those five items I have named. Because if you look at three, I don't see them where they keep in. Thank you, sir. That also would be my submission, that I think it would be a waste of time going into those terrain.
The department, I think they have noted that concern, they will respond to it.
and the Office of the State Law Advisor as to the question, is it necessary to put books in as one of the categories? Honorable Mac?
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, I've always been in disagreement with the 100 rand threshold. I've always said it must be more than 100 rand. But what I would like to know from the book, South African Book Dealers Association, to what extent do they want to, do they see relaxation if these books are not excluded? What is the extent of the relaxation that you have in mind? You said that if the books is not excluded, you have a proposal of relaxation. What is that? What does that entail? Then the other thing, there is, if books and paper, and I will think canvas will always fall, maybe also within that ambit. Then I have a fear of paintings. Or that, where does that fit in? And with my little knowledge, if I have a copy of a Van Gogh, I will come to you people and sell it, or try to sell it, or something like that. Now, I'm speaking from people in townships. You know, if you get something like that, where do you go to? You don't, the only idea you will have is going to a bookshop. Any valuable thing. Even, let me tell you, I come from a Christian background. So some Bibles have value. I'm a Catholic. So some things in the Catholic Church ambit is valuable, very valuable, that can come to you and be sold at a high price. So where does that fit in? That immediately increases. So you see, I'm looking at the cutoff, because there are valuable items within books that are much and highly rated. So somewhere there's got to be some cutoff to just stop that. Because I don't believe in a total exclusion of it, but just to curb that kind of dealings. I think I'll just stop there first. I'll later come to other people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I knew Honorable Mac. Oh yeah, maybe for easy reference, the first member who asked the question is Honorable Mzizi, M-Z-I-Z-I. For easy reference, when you respond to the question, so that you know who I'm responding to. Mr. Mzizi, or the Honorable, M-Z-I-Z-I, Mzizi. The second Honorable member is Honorable Leroux. Then the third member who just asked the question now is the Honorable Mac, M-A-C-K. Now, he will be followed by Honorable Moseki, M-O-S-E-K-I. Honorable Moseki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also agree with the colleagues that we appreciate the presentation. They are very useful to help us to understand the concerns of the dealers and so on and so forth. But let me first go to the first presenter, Chairperson. He make reference to, well, he agrees with the bill, right? Then he goes to clause 14.1 of the bill. E. And it says, does not permanently reside in the Republic. I did not get exactly what did he want this surplus to be. How should it be phrased? You can help us with that. Because from where I'm sitting, as a layman and not a lawyer, I don't have a problem with that clause, you know. I think it's correct. It is correct to me in the sense that, Chairperson, you know, it is South Africans and some South Africa, not all of them. And they are in minority. There is also some of people who are investing in South Africa who goes out there and make negative statements about South Africa as far as crime is concerned. And that catches. You actually see that when you are somewhere abroad, that South Africa is a capital of crime. And it's made by people who come from this country. Some of them are investors. Now, when you look at this bill, the overall objective really is to support the intention of the government to deal with crime in totality. That's the basic approach of this bill. Now, when you introduce this in, then you say you need flexibility on certain aspect of which, where I am sitting, I actually see that as the most stringent and a very good thing to be done. Now, if you could help me as a layman in terms of the definition that you, how do you see that definition that you will be bringing, helping us to deal with crime once and for all, and ensure that when you deal with crime, you know you don't have to use white gloves. You must actually pull out your gloves. And that's what we need to do as a country. That's the question, Chairperson. With regard to booksellers, I listened very carefully, and I, to a certain extent, sympathize. My only worry is when you don't regulate. That is very worrying. One way of curbing crime, one way of ensuring that crime is dealt with, is to regulate everything that you do, every business. And in doing that, your intention is really not to bureaucratize. It's not to deny people who are practicing. It's just to ensure that they also play their role to assist to curb the crime. Now, you're raising concern, and I hear my concern, my colleague here. How would you, if this is not, say we say no, it should not be covered, how do you, as an association, help the police, as citizens, as dealers, to ensure that the crime is eradicated at all fronts in government?
As I said, that was Honorable Museki. I will now recognize Honorable Ntuli. Oh, not now. Let me also waive, don't ask questions now. Let me start, allow my powers maybe to relax first. I'll start with the books, because the books, it's not that difficult to respond to that. Let me allow you to respond to these questions or concerns. The department will come later.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Firstly, I was not totally aware that Mr. Mazizi had asked a question. From what I heard, it was more a series of comments on our presentation where he agreed, but I heard no real point of difference between us, and so I would ask him, is there actually a formal question that he would like to ask?
Chairperson, to clarify myself, it was a comment, because I said I don't even see where they fit in all these categories, in the three categories that we spoke of. And therefore, to ask them questions, I would rather expect questions from the department to tell me exactly why books are being brought in, and other things, sporting and clothing. Because clothing and other notice, we talk of people, of fleet markets.
It's fine, Morena. The last time I checked, I was still chairing this meeting. So I can say that between the two of you, someone is chairing my meeting now. No, this was supporting you. In fact, it was sympathetic to you to say no, it doesn't need. In fact, that the question goes to the department, not to you. You can respond to the question that I directed to you by other members.
Thank you. I think it was Mr. Mack that asked to what extent we might anticipate relaxation, and then he introduced the question of a valuable, for example, a painting or some other similar valuable object. I think that putting figures on things is sometimes a very, very difficult thing to do, and I agree with him. Certainly, well, I think he's in agreement with me that 100 rand is too low a threshold for general activity and for the purposes of law enforcement and so on. It, what we're trying to do, I believe, in the object of the bill as I see it, is to eliminate major crime rather than to go all the way down to petty crime, for which there is already a substantial legislative base which deals with criminal activity, with pursuit of petty criminals and so on, and well-established police procedures for it. And I think that introducing the paperwork that is required, the load of bureaucratic administration that this Act presently would impose on the book trade, is the equivalent of using a sledgehammer to squash an ant. You know, it just doesn't... It doesn't match up with the effort. The result is not a direct correlation of the effort that would be involved to achieve the result. And in addition, I would also say that one must bear in mind that there is other statutory requirements of any trader in terms of the Internal Revenue Service's SARS demand that you keep records from whom you purchase, when you purchase, and for how much, and so on. So those records are already available or should be kept by any trader purely for tax purposes. And in the odd instance where someone has come and disposed of stolen goods to a trader and the trader has not known this, there is already a document in place which charts the transaction. So what this Act is in fact requesting is complete duplication of effort on the part of the trader who is already stretched to run his business, placing an extra load on him. I really can't, out of the top of my head, put what would constitute an adequate figure, because that I think it's invidious to put an adequate figure in without taking into account inflation. If I was up in Zimbabwe and we put $1,000 on it 2 years ago, we would now be at several trillion dollars and so on, so that nothing in Zimbabwe would ever fall into such an act. So, you know, we have problems involved in quantification as such.
Now, that deal with millions in Zimbabwe.
Trillions.
Trillions now.
Trillion rand. No,
you can't even buy a box of match.
I don't know whether one can afford it. But yes, I take your point nonetheless. That to get back to the serious side, that there are objects which have considerable commercial value, and there are objects which could, for example, be pilfered from major institutions, museums, and other things which need to be addressed. I think, though, that to some extent, the more valuable the item is, the more well it is already documented in the marketplace. So that somebody comes to you with the Mona Lisa, you say, hang on, this is the Mona Lisa, I know where that belongs. And so on. And somebody comes to you with a major book, that book is a valuable book because there are so few copies in existence or in the marketplace that their existence is already well known. And this is one of the ways in which we as a trade regulate, that when somebody comes with something that is so unusual, we don't just buy it over the counter. We want to know where you got it from, how is this, we know that this or that institution has one, and so on. So we ask questions, and we also, there is a kind of subjective matching of the person trying to sell it to you and the object itself, so that it soon appears completely obvious to us that the person offering the goods does not have title to those goods. It's self-evident, because this is not a this is not stuff that falls off the back of the truck as such. This is highly individual material and matched not just the possession of goods, but matched to the personality and the whole sort, the whole being that is the whole person that is selling it to you. And so that in itself is a part of the self-regulating aspect of this, of the transaction. Likewise with paintings, each painting has an identity. I would say that other categories of valuables are not, with the exception of coins and stamps. Those I'm prepared to concede have the same problem issues that the book trade has, and that is that identity is very difficult to establish of the individual item, and that they are initially produced in large quantities. Paintings and other valuables exist and are produced in small quantities. A painter's output over their lifetime is, let's say, 2,000 paintings, which is relatively high. The average edition of a book today is 20,000 to 100,000 for a popular selling book, and so on. So that books and paper items are produced in far larger quantities than works of art. I understand also that, and I think that to answer the question earlier as to where this came into the Act, I suspect that it was lifted from the NHRA, from the National Heritage Resources Act, and that what was sort of rubber stamped into the schedule were the categories of goods that fell under national treasure. And so I would say that there is already well established existing regulation and legislation to limit the distribution of or disposal of items of value which could be constituted national treasure. And so,
if you can wrap up, please. Right. If you can try to wrap up.
Yes. So that's as far as I want to go in terms of Mr. So how? Well, I think I've covered both sides in essence, both from Mr. Moseki's point of view. I have established part of how we regulate insofar as the I believe that there is sufficient body of legislation on the one side to firmly regulate how the trade runs, both from a revenue point of view, both from a police and stolen goods perspective, without going to another level of onerous regulation. We are obviously all committed to fighting crime, and we don't want to see crime. We just don't. But our day-to-day experience over the last 50 years of trade in this country is that crime is not a significant aspect of our trade. We don't get offered stolen goods. People don't steal books for commercial gain. People steal books for personal gain, and that is something which we cannot regulate, unfortunately. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just like to make a personal comment with my bookshop hat on rather than my Samba hat on. I'm in Grahamstown. When a person comes into my shop, every item that I buy, or collection of items for which I pay more than 20 rand, which is virtually everything nowadays, I record the date, the person's name, their residential address, telephone number, identity number. This I do for SARS, so I just want to sort of make sure in the minds of the committee that we do record these things, but I certainly don't for the sales, which the bill also wants. But any expensive items are invariably sold on invoice rather than just across the counter, and then one, of course, one does have that sort of detail. On the theft side, okay, Grahamstown is a university town, and I do buy many, many books from students, and I work closely with Rhodes University because almost every year somebody claims this student has got my book, and the students then it gets to the university level, and the university security come running down to me, because invariably a student says I bought it at Fravel's bookshop, and then we go through my record and I say yes, that book's got the number there, and I bought that book from this student, and then there's a whole procedure and disciplinary action is taken. So I think most members of the trade work in a similar way, that we do keep records which enable us to trace causes of petty theft. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe we'll allow our lady to respond. There is fresh tea here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to break for tea, but you can quietly sneak out and grab your cup and whatever, drink, and enjoy it while working. Yes, madam.
I wanted to address Honorable Maseki. You wanted to know how we would regulate this. As it's a matter of pride to belong to our association. We have a constitution, and there are a number of criteria we need to meet. It's a very ethical association, and we stress ethics involved in dealing. And we all have a lot of personal pride involved in conducting our businesses in an ethical manner. And if you transgress that, you no longer belong to the association. So I would like to say that our association is capable of self-policing and is a part of belonging to our association.
Thank you very much. Any other comments from the books? Good.
Perhaps I can just try and sum it up. The association fully supports all aspects of the bill, its intention to regulate crime and so on. In buying, we have records of everything we buy. All we need, all we are asking for is a relaxation in some of the measures in terms of selling, which is just administratively impossible. Every book would have to be recorded, ID numbers obtained from people you're selling books to over the counter for 10 or 20 rand or something. It's just, you know, it's administratively impossible. And so that really, that's the aspect of the Act that we are asking to be modified. Thank you.
Thank you very much, from the book dealers. Gwezan, tell us
about. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I will address I'll first address the question raised by Honorable Mzizi. Umpofana says that the foreign nationals that come to the country with previous convictions or with questionable records, why shouldn't they not be dealt with within the context of the current formulation? My response to that is, honorable members, we should shy away from a presumption that...
Well, fine, are you listening?
I think we should shy away from a presumption that a certain category of persons is inherently criminal. So, if indeed we have a problem of crime in the scrap metal industry, it will apply both to local dealers in as much as it will apply to foreign dealers. However, I also need to say that we have a very mature statecraft. When a person applies to come into the country, a person needs to be vetted through the Home Affairs system. And if a person applies for a work permit in this country, they also go through that rigorous process. And not only that, the companies they have report to SARS on PAYE, they report to SARS on their income in the country, because we have a residence-based system. Further, if you are a company and you are a local company, you will need to register with the Department of Trade and Industry through CIPRO. And at CIPRO, they will require your personal particulars,
So I think we've got those mechanisms to address that situation. And when I deal with the question from Honorable Moseki, I wish to repeat what I said about my comments to Honorable Mzizi, but add the following, that when we take away the blanket presumption, we then need to say that at least in this bad lot, there are some who are good. For instance, my clients, for the past 5 years of having traded in the country, they have not been questioned by the police, they have not been involved in any criminal activity, and they have not been charged of any crime in the country, both in their corporate sphere and as well as in their individual managers. However, I need to say as well that Honorable Moseki says, what should we do to combat crime in this type of industry? I wish to say that we can rely on measures such as the one we'll find in Section 41E of the bill, where the minister can prescribe conditions on certain categories of goods. For instance, if I were the minister, I'll consider whether it's appropriate for me to say anybody selling copper wires, anybody selling those blocks from the rails, they need to satisfy certain criteria when buying those type of goods. I'll have listed items which need particular attention and procedures before they can enter the system. And I need to just emphasize why my clients are so anxious about Section 14 and Section 2 in their current formulation. They will have to shut down. Once this act is passed, they will be committing an offense if they continue to trade, because they have in their equity foreign interest. And that shutdown is going to affect jobs, it's going to affect our forex, it's going to affect our tax. And we're talking about about 6 billion industry per year. So that's the effect. And also, I think it will perpetuate unfair discrimination of the foreign nationals that trade in the scrap metal industry. These are the foreign nationals who trade in other industries and who hold the same valid papers as the people in the scrap metal industry. You can be an expert and work for Neotel, but you can be an expert and work in the scrap metal industry. That's what I'm trying to say. We're bringing a differentiation whose rationality is a bit questionable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. In addition? No? Right. Questions were asked, responses are given. Let's come in again, brother.
Yes, Chair. I think my colleague has just alluded to me that we were asked what kind of measures would be appropriate to address this concern that we have. In our view, the amendment here, the reason why we think an amendment of 14.1E is necessary is because permanently reside is not defined. Permanently reside is only defined in the sister legislation, which is the Immigration Act. Are we dovetailing and incorporating the Immigration Act by reference? And the reason why, Honorable Moseki, we have a problem about does not permanently reside is that we've got a whole lot of skills that GIPSA also says we need to attract to the country, and also a lot of investment that ASGISA says we must attract to the country. However, we know that permanent residence is not for the taking in this country. You need to satisfy certain criteria. And now, it also makes nonsense of a valid work permit, because then you can't use it in the scrap metal industry. And now we're saying that the relaxation we need is that perhaps if this person does not permanently reside in the country, which means he does not hold a work permit, he does not hold a permanent residence in this country, then
perhaps it's necessary that we add some form of saying, if you don't permanently reside here and you do not have a valid work permit, we don't want you here. You can't be in the scrap metal. Or some other way we think the committee, if it deems fit, but it should allow experts in the scrap metal industry to be able to contribute to our economy, in as much as they contribute in other sectors. If our government is able to invite foreign nationals to advise on economics, like the group from Harvard, that we can't have foreign nationals to assist us, but we can also invite the Cuban doctors to assist us to deal with our health problem, but we can't allow experts in the scrap metal industry. That to me results in some discrepancy, which we will need a legitimate governmental effort to do, if we are to do it.
Those are concrete views, Honorable Mzizi, from the metal industry, putting a very strong case. As a committee, when we finalize this thing next week, we'll have to consider all these things. And I'll produce the recorded version of what transpired today, so that we are fresh in our minds when we discuss this thing next week. Those are very strong views from both groups. Now, before I allow members to come in again, let me call my friend over at the department. You heard the views from both sides, from the book dealers and from the metal industry. As a committee, we're going to express our view. As you've heard, members will just ask some questions, having their comments. But we'll have our view next week when we finally decide as to what is it. But up until now, we've heard the strong case by both groups, which is very convincing. It's up to the department now to tell us, what's your view from this submission by both groups? Over to you, Bruce.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, as you know, our role is just here to assist the committee, not we don't really have a view on these matters. But with regards to the books, honorable members, the books were put in during the process of drafting, as it was felt that some of these books might also be quite valuable. The bill, obviously, as with all legislation, intends to regulate for the ideal situation and therefore cover as much as possible. We do not know what will happen in 10 years. Books may be redundant by then and very valuable, for instance. But I just also, with regards to the minimum figure, I would also like to point out, if books that are in a set are sold one by one, they may have a value of less than 100 rand. But that set may be worth literally thousands, and I think the association will have to agree with me on that. But with regard to the books, honorable members, we don't have a specific opinion with regards to the books, but I think this is an excellent example of how the bill is how it intends to work, because this is an association that has an ethical basis, that will discipline its members, that polices its own members, and communicates when things are stolen. And when such an association is accredited, the minister may very well exempt these dealers from complying with the Act. And I think this is specifically the idea with a bill, to allow the industries to regulate themselves so that their members may have the benefit of the exemption. The fact that other legislation applies is obviously will be a recommendation when the associations apply to the minister to be exempted. Secondly, with regard to the scrap metal, honorable members, it's a pity that Edward Nathan Zonenberg didn't raise these concerns during 2005 when we had discussions about the scrap metal dealers. Because then we could have discussed these issues at that very early stage. Be that as it may, this is also an example where, if the dealers belong to an association, they may request the exemption through that association. With regards to the Immigration Act, I think it is just a matter that we must realize that acts are read in context. So the question of foreigners will be read in the context also of the Immigration Act. And then further, honorable members, the presenter made a point, and I think the specific reference was made to Neotel and Cuban doctors. I think we may safely state that Cuban doctors and Neotel aren't as involved in crime as copper thieves. Just to give an example, once again, the presentation was made to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee chair. The primary copper imports amount to 100,000 tons and also 15,000 tons, which comes to about 15,000 tons of copper, which is imported. We consume in South Africa approximately 40,000 tons, and then we export 80,000 tons. So somewhere along the line, 5,000 tons of copper vanishes, which is exactly the reason why this industry must be regulated very stringently. And in the case of the presenter representing the scrap metal dealers, these dealers may, if they belong to an association, also request the benefit of the exemption. And the idea is not to punish the foreign nationals, but to draw them into specific associations so that there is a matter of self-regulation. I think this committee obviously realizes the problem that we would have with unregulated persons, whether they be foreign nationals or not, but policing the foreign nationals who are unregulated is obviously a problem.
What I can clarify here, allow Ndombi to come in as well, if she wants to, from the Office of the State Law Advisor. If you want to, you can come in. Maybe I come in now before I make my comment, if you want to. If there's any comment from you before.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, I'm partly covered by what Bert is saying about accreditation, because it's a point I'm going to bring to the attention of the presenter, that if the dealers are part of a dealers association, they are covered because they do not have to go through this registration, and they are exempted from the provisions of this Act. So whether as individuals or as a juristic person. And secondly, I see this disqualification in 14BE as an ordinary limitation falling under Section 36 of the Constitution, because it's not specifically targeting foreigners. It says if you're not a permanent resident. So it means if I'm in business as a dealer and I'm no longer a permanent resident of the Republic of South Africa, then this is applying to me also. So it's not discriminating against any particular group of persons, permanent residents. So if it means to be covered, then permanent residence is to be defined in terms of this Act, that may be, but permanent residence is not in this context discriminating against particular people, everybody who's not a permanent resident.
Yeah, as I say, if you can get three lawyers in one room, give them only one clause to interpret it, you'll get about many interpretations. Maybe what I want to assure our presenters here, in this committee, we are so independent that when we invite people to come and make a presentation before us, it's not just for the sake of doing it. If in our view we feel we're making a strong case, we're able to amend, regardless of what our colleagues in the NA has done. We have amended so many clauses. You understand where we even engage our colleagues and make them aware that they overlooked some of the reasons. And up until now, I'm happy to say all our amendments that we have made in all the decisions have been accepted by our colleagues in that side. So this is not just an exercise of fulfillment, no. That I can assure you that we'll do just that. Because there won't be any use for us to call it to come down here just for the sake of sugarcoating or just
Yeah. I see Umahlangu wants to make a point to the responses that came from the department. And I can see from the book dealers as well, they want to come in to clarify other issues. I'm happy to hear a response about what was said by Ntombi there from the office of the state law advisor, that this clause that does not necessarily exclude foreigners who are investing in our country. So I'll be happy to hear the explanation from the department, from them as whether they are comfortable with that kind of explanation, or you still feel you have to be it has to be clarified further. Let me allow the booksellers. I can see, sorry, I forgot the name of the gentleman. Not you. No. Yeah, he wanted to come in. Okay, no, it's fine. Come.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm a little confused at the response in terms of accredited associate of an accreditation, because it still does not address the core issue of whether the actual category of goods should be in the schedule of the Act or not. So that I don't, what we are requesting from the committee is the removal of the category. We don't mind being an accredited organization policing certain aspects of it, but we are actually looking to have books excluded as a category of goods that fall under the Act because of the confusion that could well arise from their inclusion unless it is defined in much more rigorous terms than it is at present. I don't otherwise see quite how we are a very small association and a very small trade, and there is nonetheless the category of goods will still remain there. Perhaps this can be explained to us in some greater detail so that we at least understand how accreditation is going to actually solve our initial problem. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, madam?
We seem to be in three parts of this Act, as household goods, books, and valuables. And I think we would seek to get it not have books affected in this way. I mean, you can, we are in three parts of it, and I find that problematic. Three categories, yeah.
Can you itemize them again in that sequence?
Household goods, valuables, and books.
Bert, you got that, eh? Okay. Yeah, Mkweza.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to first address the committee on Sis Ntombi's submission. I differ vigorously with her interpretation. It's incongruent with the approach that the Constitutional Court has adopted in interpreting our Constitution. If you look at clause 6.5 of our main submission.
Just a minute, Mgweza, I want your attention. I want your undivided attention. No, you can consult, Bert, you can consult, because I want your undivided attention when he addresses you.
If you go to our written submission that we've submitted to the committee, at paragraph 6.5, you will read there that section 9.1 of the Constitution says everyone has a right not to be discriminated against. At number 2, in Khoza and others versus Minister of Social Development, and Masaule and others versus the same minister, the court said everyone means everyone, which includes foreign nationals. Now,
if you go back then to Section 14, as I said, you cannot read permanent residence in vacuum. Permanent residence in this regard is permanent residence in respect as defined in the Immigration Act, which means a person only acquires permanent residence here if he's a foreign national. If you are South African and you are naturalized, then you are a citizen. If you have permanent residence, it means you are a national from another country who has then acquired that status by virtue of qualifying in terms of the Immigration Act. So you are a group of persons. You are an identified group of persons. Now, if we identify you and say you group of persons who you are a former foreign national, but you have not acquired, you have not been naturalized yet, you are a permanent resident, you don't qualify for this if you are not that kind of person. Then you are an absolute foreigner. So you have three people here. You have citizens, either by naturalization or birth. You have permanent residents, which are former foreign nationals, but who have not yet been naturalized. So those are two groups of people. A third group is foreigners. So if you are making this differentiation, it's inescapable that you will reach the distinction of those three types of people. So I do not understand Usisi Ntombi when she says, even if you are staying here and then you leave, and then you are no longer permanently resident. That's a very literal interpretation. If you leave here and you go and settle in the UK, you don't lose your South African citizenship. You can still then trade in scrap metals in this country. You cannot be looked at as, unless you renounce your citizenship. So I think that needs to be understood very properly and in that context. So if then we are saying there is an identified group of people which is foreigners, right, vis-a-vis permanent residents, vis-a-vis citizens. Now, as we deal with these people, and we say they are not entitled to hold interest in scrap metal, then we need to have a legitimate, rational, governmental purpose. And in this instance, it's curbing crime. But if you are curbing crime, are you right to then presume that every foreign national is a criminal? I doubt the Constitutional Court will agree with you in that distinction. Now, also, the Constitutional Court will ask itself, are there any other measures you can use to deal with crime and not discriminate? I think we will need to do that. And I think that, and I think that we need to address ourselves into what we want to achieve. We can then ask ourselves whether this act, as kind of still formulated, does it deal with that insofar as the foreign ownership. Let's look at other acts where there's serious crime, right? Look at the Telecoms Act, where the theft of cell phones and all those things is rife. What they've done, they didn't disallow foreign ownership. What they did, they then went and put a section in the registration, in the RICA. They had now the e-RICA, where a person who purchases a handset has to fill in certain details about his residence, where he lives, about his contact details, and all those things. They didn't disallow it. I mean, the majority of all our companies, you've got Vodafone, in Vodacom, in MTN, you have it run by a foreign national. You have Saudi OJ in Cell C. I mean, and then we have to be able to say in this kind of in, what is so special that in this one we need a blanket prohibition. Even in broadcasting, all that you are asked to do is there is a quota. They say public opinion in this country cannot be controlled by foreign nationals, and therefore you cannot have more than 25% ownership in a broadcaster. So there are measures that are less stringent. Unless here we will need to explain to the court why do we need a blanket prohibition in this industry. And also the other unintended effect is that there's emerging black business, which is which will be precluded from doing joint ventures with foreign companies. So we need to be mindful of those kind of consequences. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mashangu. Yeah, I said I'll request the Uber to come in now, and Mrs. Ndombi also to respond to the argument from Leonard's friend. Okay. But
thank you, Khoshi. The situation is not as dire as the presenter is trying to sketch, with all due respect, Honorable Chair. The bill specifically states that a person can apply for an exemption to the minister, and if there is a reasonable explanation for that, the minister will obviously apply his or her mind. The situation is that as other legislation that allows foreigners to have dealings, etc., does not have a purpose as with this bill, where the theft of goods or the crime generated by the theft of goods, for instance, the killings associated with hijackings, etc., is not such a huge problem in this country. So the government motive with this bill is quite obvious, and I don't have to underline that to the committee. So if there is a person who is a foreign national, who is not does not permanently reside in the Republic, there is still a process through which those people may be accommodated to register as dealers or to have an interest in dealers. In a dealership. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think really the one point that we agree on with my learned colleague is that permanent residence, the issue lies with permanent residence. And the important part about using a word in the legislation is to define it in terms of the legislation. Because we may have different definitions in 100 other pieces of legislation, but it needs to be defined in the context in which it is used in this legislation. So whether it is defined in what way in the Immigration Act, so if the intention is to take that definition, then we must have a definition and then cross-refer to that one. But up until we know the context in which it is used in this bill, then we'll only get the way forward. Want to clarify that, so maybe the department can assist in that area as it's a policy, because they know why they use the term permanent residence. When you go back to the constitution, rights were read out and like section 9(1) in the constitution, but I'm still going to refer back to the section 36 of the constitution, the limitation of all the rights, whatever right that is in the constitution. Maybe if I can just read out sub 1. The rights in the Bill of Rights may be limited only in terms of the law of general application to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality and freedom, taking into account relevant factors. Then it goes on listing the factors. My point is that this is a fairly justifiable limitation, not targeting any particular group. So that is the point, Chair. So we agree that they are right, as they are stated by my learned colleague, but there is a limitation. That is, the purpose of this law is to limit those rights in a fairly justified way. And the second is that the Dealers Association part has not been addressed by my colleague, whether the clients have any problem in bypassing the law by joining the Dealers Association, which can be accredited.
Yeah, I can see Perry wants to come in. Those are going to address us now. Can you be brief? Want to summarize this discussion so that we agree on the way forward from here. As a committee, I think we know what we're going to do. I got a gist of this thing now, even though we can't pronounce ourselves here, but we got a gist of what's going on. Bert, you want to come in before I allow Mashangu to come in?
Thank you, Khoshi. That's just in supporting Ntombi there, I think a definition of permanent residence may solve the problem, firstly. And secondly, the insertion that ENS recommends with regards to the work permit, I think could also be considered by the committee. I do not think that's an. I actually think that's a good suggestion. So the work permit issue may be addressed, and also a definition of permanent residence.
Okay. Before Maslang, you will be the last one on this matter. Yes, Chief.
Sorry. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I would like to ask Ms. Ntombi as just a simple question. She seems to believe that joining an that being accredited is sufficient for the industry. I would like to know how being accredited in fact relaxes the administrative burden on us. All it does is it shifts it sideways and says you will be the police instead of the police being the police, and that's very satisfactory for the state, is hardly satisfactory for the industry.
Okay, Tom will come in. If they want to come in now, can I allow them to let them scratch it out and then you'll come late? Or what was this, Honorable Leru?
Chairperson, I want to assist myself because if I don't run now, I'm going to miss my flight. And I'd like to remind you
of the promise,
the promise you made last night that we can arrange our flights for early this afternoon. So I just want to find out one thing, and then in my absence they can even reply to that. But the question of getting an exemption because you're in a strong association, an accredited association, what does it actually mean in practice? You can explain that to me, and then I didn't hear you say or give any reasons why books were actually included in the book, because they're not a threat as far as crime is concerned, or if there is a threat, it's so little that it's negligible. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to run as soon as I must.
No. As we indicated, in fact, we're supposed to have adjourned at 11, but I know I said members will strictly listen to everybody for 2 hours. Another committee will engage whatever input next week. But because of being so determined and committed to this committee, here you are, you know, still here, you know. That's why I can't choose any other committee than this. And I can't choose any other members of my committee other than yourselves. Ntombi, can you address us for a few minutes, please? Just be brief.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue of accreditation in relation to the books and in relation to the foreigner is going to be a bit different. That's why there's going to be a confusion. So I did not address any comments in relation to the books. I left it with Mr. Van der Waals. My comments in association is relating to the foreigners, as a comment from my learned colleague. So that's why it's going to be a bit confusing. In as far as the disqualifications are concerned, joining the dealers associations as is required by Section 42(1), which says this act does not apply to any dealer who is a member of an accredited association, to the extent the minister by notice of the gazette exempts the members. That means it's a way out, which I'm pointing to whoever is suffering from the disqualification, including the clients of Mr. Mashango. So that is the context of the accreditation that I'm addressing.
As I said, I want him to the last one. Bert, I said specifically, why did you include books? Is there any threat by books? More especially, books will be books, you know.
Thank you, Khoshi. I think that the situation is that...
Addressing the three categories outlined by the madam here.
Thank you, The situation with books, why it was included, is to make the application of the Act as wide as possible. If I can give you an example, Honourable Chair, with your permission, where the present Act excludes household and office equipment. So that is not regulated, and that is one of our biggest crime problems at the moment. It includes, however, sewing machines. So sewing machines are heavily regulated. Now, in 1955, that was a huge concern of government, to regulate sewing machines. And this is just to illustrate how things may change over a period of time. And to address the question by the Honourable LaRue, I think may also illustrate how this specific problem with the books may be addressed. Honourable members, you will remember that we stated that an accredited association, the members of such an accredited association may be exempted from certain provisions. Now, one of the examples of that would be, for instance, the Secondhand Vehicle Dealers Association, where the members who are required to keep records in terms of the National Road Traffic Act and also for the revenue services, SARS purposes, those people will be exempted from record keeping for purposes of this act. So they won't have to write everything up, they won't have to keep IDs, they won't have to comply with every single provision of the act. And because that association represents ethical and honest dealers, the members will be exempted. And I think in a certain sense, that also will apply to every other single type of association and also with the books, where if a stock register, for instance, is kept, because there will be some register of sorts, that dealer may be excluded in terms of this form.
Yeah, I can see the book dealers are a bit comfortable now. They're a bit comfortable, but we'll need something to prove exactly what you just said, just to see when we finally put, when we clean up that clause, at least so that we are clear that some of the concerns are allayed. Yes, can I now open a space for Umgwezane to address the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we live in an era of competing human rights. There is a right of freedom of association. Which right should be read in its entirety? If I'm scrap metal dealer A and apply to the association for membership and they decide for one reason or other that they don't want me, then I'm vulnerable. Number two, if for some reason we've got competing commercial interests as members of the association and they decide to release me from the association, then as my clients in that situation, I'm completely vulnerable. I can't trade. So, and I think that for the benefit of Sisintombi, there's serious collusion in this industry. And there's serious counter-commercial interests. And to use this Section 41 as a remedy, it's not practical. Yes, it works while you're still a member, but when they send you away, or when they act against you in a commercial deal, and they decide to take you out of the market, you have trouble. And Chair, I also want to say that the exemption that you can seek from the minister, the act, there's no regs yet. The act does not tell you what you need to satisfy the minister about for you to gain the said accreditation. It leaves you with an open check. And it also puts you more at a disadvantage, because if it comes into force as it is, and you're not a member of an association, then you can't trade from the very date of commencement. You have to apply to the minister for exemption. So how do we deal with that conundrum? So I think that for us to promote competition in the scrap metal industry, we need to be able to lessen the burden of being a member of an association. So I think we need to balance that interest, and also to not to forget that there is a right of freedom of association, either by the members of the association itself or by my client. So I think we need to counterbalance those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We listen to all the views. I think we have noted all the arguments. It's up to us as a committee now to go and sit down and redraft if we had to. Try to give some directives to the Office of the State Law Advisor to the Department to come with a draft that will capture exactly what the committee wants. But this was a very fruitful discussion, very, very helpful to the committee, because at least we know what to do when we finally sit and consider this bill finally. Those who will be interested, you can send some one or two observers come in and listen to our deliberations when we sit as a committee to finalize the bill. But I think we've had your views. But if you feel there are extra information that you feel might be important to the committee to consider, feel free to send them to us. And before when? Yeah, before the 9th of September. Before the 9th of September. If you feel you want to send us anything that will assist us to slot in your argument, feel free to do that. But this discussion has really helped us a great deal. I know the department will be with us all the way until we finish, even the Office of the State Law Advisor. I will now request... Because Honorable Museki will, on behalf of the committee, thank both instances. But I would request now where both the book dealers, they will deploy one person to speak on their behalf to have a parting shot before we say thank you to you. Have your own bilaterals or multi-party discussions and agree who's going to thank the committee on your behalf and the metal dealers as well. You have a parting shot as well, a parting shot before we adjourn. Then at the end, Honorable Museki will say a word on our behalf. Now, while they are still heavy with their discussions at the book dealers, let me check with Matlangu if you want to start first. A parting shot.
Thank you, Chair. We would like to thank the committee for having afforded us this opportunity and also for the informative questions that have been asked and the erudite debate that we were afforded by my learned colleagues from SAPS and the state law advisors. And we know and we hold a mandate from our clients to inform you that they are fully committed to trade in this country and to abide by all the applicable laws. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matlangu, from the book dealers.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. I think our prime concern still rests on the question of accreditation not being a sufficient safeguard against the inclusion of books within the ambit of the Act and the consequences that flow from that, as far as I can see, unless we have a completely wrong interpretation of what accreditation means, implies, and that includes the processes of obtaining accreditation, maintaining accreditation, and admitting members to our association, which gives them that accreditation, all I see in terms of the proposed bill, which does not contain such a mechanism, that accreditation merely means a shifting of the responsibility of administering the Act from the burden passes from the state to the individual associations. And so, but without relaxing any adherence to the provisions of this, except at the grace and favour of the minister, and what the minister may or may not do is not specified in any way within the Act. And so it leaves us with a grey area, which we, I must say, I cannot see a solution to. The solution lies in either a definition of what constitutes a book that falls within the ambit of the Act, or scrapping books altogether from the Act. That is, as far as I can see, the question that we would like to leave with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I said, in fact, I'll be happy if you can, because this submission, it deals a range of issues. If you can send the proposed formulation as how do you want this clause to look like? I know that the same thing will be done by the metal dealers. If you can have that, we'll appreciate that so that to remove whatever doubt. Then, based on those submissions, we'll engage the two offices, the department and the Office of the State Law Advisor, to see if those formulations can be accommodated or not. But the final verdict will come from the committee. Whatever the department, that office said, we are Alpha and Omega. Okay. Yeah, having said that, can I now allow Honorable Moseki to say a word on our behalf? Monica? I'm glad to hear them. Thank you very much. She's our one and only, you know, the only link between ourselves and the minister. She's very good. Welcome, Monica. I should have done that earlier on. She's a darling, you know, for that matter. Thanks, Monica. Honorable Moseki.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's take this opportunity to thank all the presenters and say to them that all the presentations that you have made to the committee have been very useful. The Chairperson says we came here to listen to you. Our time to deliberate on the bill will come. And of course, invitation has been extended to you if you would want to observe when we deliver it. We just want to say to you that rest assured, those inputs, those presentations will be considered when we deliver it. The Chairperson makes a statement that we are an Alpha and Omega. That's our role. That's our role, but as we do that, we look all the important presentations made by the department, your good self, and then we try to strike a balance among all those, because we don't want anybody at the end of the day, but over and above that, the community, the people, the country to suffer. We want cooperation among all the role players. So that's what the committee will do. For those few words, Chairperson, we want to say that we have also noted that the bookkeeper says there's a key area with regard to the role of the minister. And of course, the Chairperson says, make a further submission on that. We will really appreciate that. With those words, thank you very much for the good presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Colleagues, we're meeting again next week, Tuesday. Monday, as you're aware, it's a constituency day or party day. So our engagement starts on Tuesday. Yeah, let's come and do what we are known for, what we are good at. Everybody in this room, you are invited to go and enjoy our sumptuous lunch that will be ready from now at 90 Plain Street. Ntombi and Grace and Patricia and everybody will lead you to the exact place we are going to enjoy this lunch. You're all invited. But those who might be pressed for time to go and catch their flights, thanks for enriching our discussion. And when those who are flying out, until we meet again, fly safe. On that note, from yours truly, the meeting is adjourned.